Okay, let's unpack this. We've got a file here, a specific report about a residential haunting back in 2006.
Right. This is one of those deep dives into a single family's experience, what they documented in this rental home. It's in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. And it's a pretty unsettling sequence of events they went through. The file focuses on 1728 Millwood Drive. So our plan today is really to walk you through what the Stevens family reported, what they actually experienced there.
And also what they dug up, about the property's history.
Exactly. And see what this account might tell us about how places, maybe their histories, can impact the present, maybe give you some things to look for in other cases too.
Absolutely. What's interesting in this file is how clearly it tracks this escalation. It starts off subtle, almost easy to dismiss,
Right.
but then it builds into something that felt, well, terrifyingly personal for this family.
And like a lot of these accounts, it starts with what looks like a fresh start, a new beginning.
The file introduces Anjanette Stevens moving in with her two young kids. This was 2006.
And the notes, they really paint this picture of hope, don't they?
They do. That initial context is important. The source mentions the house had real appeal. The rent was cheap, which is always a factor.
Definitely.
The neighborhood seemed quiet, safe. You get the sense Anjanette really felt this was a chance to, settle down, build a new chapter.
That feeling of optimism, it really sets up the contrast with what came later, makes it hit harder.
It really does. And that contrast is crucial for understanding the story this file tells. It wasn't like a switch flipped. It was gradual, this slow creep of unease.
Before the really dramatic stuff happened, and those subtle details, they often get glossed over, but they're key for setting that psychological stage.
Exactly. The file details these early persistent things, like the coldness.
Ah, yes, the cold.
Not just drafty, the report calls it a persistent, intense cold, specifically in the hallways. Didn't matter the season, didn't matter the heating, it felt wrong.
That kind of localized, weird cold comes up a lot in these reports, doesn't it? Hard to explain away.
It really does. And alongside that, they started hearing things. Footsteps.
On the stairs at night.
Yeah, clear footsteps on the stairs when nobody was up there. That sound, movement in an empty house, it's deeply unsettling. Suggests a presence.
But maybe the creepiest early detail, for me anyway, reading this file was the whispers.
Oh, yeah. Coming through the vents.
Through the vents.
Okay.
Think about that. Not just random sounds, but seemingly directed, coming from inside the house's own structure.
Whispers feel so secretive, too. Like someone's talking, just out of earshot. It destroys that feeling of being alone.
Totally. So these early things, the cold, the steps, the whispers, maybe not physically threatening at first, but they build this sense of intrusion. Like the house itself is active, watching.
And that's where, if you're looking at your own sources, digging into those kinds of patterns can be helpful. Is it persistent? Where is it happening? Details like that, like in this file, they're valuable.
So this period of subtle stuff, it eventually shifts. It gives way to something much more direct, especially hitting the kids. This is where the file takes a really dark turn.
Yes, the escalation became undeniable then, and it hit the children first. The first big incident involved the son.
Woke up screaming. Right.
Middle of the night, screaming. And according to the report, it wasn't just a bad dream. He described something very specific he saw.
A figure.
A figure standing right at the foot of his bed. And he described it clearly. A man dressed in black, but with striking red eyes.
Red eyes. Wow. That's not just a shadow. That's a distinct, really frightening image. That detail, the red eyes, pops up sometimes in reports of entities. It suggests something more than just a vague shape.
And horribly, it wasn't just him. About a week later, the file says something equally disturbing happened with his sister, the daughter.
And Jeanette found her in her room.
Found her standing in a corner, just standing there, unblinking.
Okay, that's chilling.
And apparently, she was repeating something, chanting. And the detail that makes this absolutely terrifying, according to the file, she
What?
was chanting in Latin.
No, a little
A
kid.
young child, seemingly in some kind of trance, repeating phrases in a language she just shouldn't know.
Yeah.
That detail pushes it beyond just seeing things, doesn't it? It feels more interactive,
Baby. Or
manipulative.
trying to communicate through her. That's horrifying.
These two incidents, with the son seeing the figure and the daughter chanting Latin, they're really the pivot point in this file's narrative.
Yeah, it goes from the house feeling wrong to something visually showing up and seemingly influencing the kids.
So for Anjanette, obviously this was it. This
Yeah.
crossed the line. and that's what the file says prompted her next move.
Which makes total sense. Your kids are seeing figures chanting in Latin. You'd do something. She started digging into the house's history, right? 1728 Millwood Drive.
Exactly. She needed answers. Is there something in the past connected to this? It's a really common reaction you see in these reports. People trying to find a historical reason for the weirdness happening now.
And she found something.
Oh, yeah. She found a history of extreme violence right there in the house. The file states that back in 1993, so about 13 years before they moved in, there was a murder-suicide.
In the house itself.
Inside the house.
Correct.
A man living there murdered his wife and his daughter. And then, the report says he hanged himself in the basement.
Oh my God, wife and daughter. Just like Anjanette's family structure.
Exactly. It provides this really chillingly direct link. Multiple violent deaths within those walls. It gives a potential anchor, you know, for the negativity the family was experiencing.
And there's that detail in the file about the neighbors.
Right. The neighbors actually knew about this. They knew about the murder-suicide, but nobody told Anjanette when she rented the place.
That's silence. It just adds another layer of creepiness, doesn't it? Maybe they were just reluctant to talk about it, or maybe something else.
It really makes you wonder. And again, for anyone analyzing sources, it shows why you need to look beyond just the reported experiences. Dig into the history, the local context, the property's reputation. Sometimes that's where the connections lie, like it seems to here.
So she finds this horrible history. The terror is escalating with her kids. The file says Anjanette then sought help, but not like conventional help.
Right. She brought in a local priest. Hoped a blessing, a religious cleansing, might get rid of whatever was there. Another common step you see in these kinds of persistent haunting reports.
But it didn't exactly bring peace, did it? The blessing itself had issues.
Not at all. The file describes some pretty dramatic things happening during the blessing ritual itself. It wasn't quiet.
What happened?
As the priest was doing the rites, apparently the lights in the house just burst.
Burst? Like, all at once?
Simultaneously blew out. A sudden violent reaction from the house itself, basically.
Bro, that's not settled.
And then there's this really interesting detail about the family dog.
The dog reacted.
Yeah, the dog hadn't really been part of the phenomena before. But during the blessing, it started growling. Really aggressively.
Just generally, or at something specific.
That's the key. It was directing this intense aggression towards a specific empty spot in the room.
Ah, the classic animal reaction.
Exactly. Often interpreted in these files as animals sensing something humans can't, and focusing on empty space suggests it was reacting to something unseen.
So the events during the blessing, they imply whatever was there wasn't just like residual energy, it actively fought back.
It seemed to resist the ritual, yeah. Which, in the context of this file, definitely lends weight to the idea of a conscious presence, maybe even malevolent, rather than just an echo. The reaction was immediate and pretty forceful.
So after that, what happened to the family? The file's pretty clear.
Right? Very clear. They left. Fast. The report says they were out of there within 2 weeks of that blessing attempt.
Can't blame them, given everything, the escalation, the kids, the history, the resistance to the blessing. Pleading seems like the only rational choice left. We see that endpoint a lot in these extreme cases.
And what about the house itself? 1728 Millwood Drive since 2006. The file touches on that, too.
It stood mostly empty, hasn't it? Like, people can't stay there.
Seems that way. Difficult for anyone to live there for long, maybe impossible. It's like the property itself carries this heavy reputation now.
And the file mentions the local nickname for it.
Yeah, chilling name. The House That Hates.
The House That Hates. Wow. That name just says it all, doesn't it? Sums up the feeling of malice, the negativity implied by everything in this file. Connects the history, the phenomena, the house itself, and people's minds there.
So that whole trajectory. Hopeful start, escalating terror tied to a violent past, ending with the family being driven out.
Yeah.
It's a really potent, unsettling account in this file. A contained case study, almost.
Yeah, shows how these things can develop, how history and present experiences can collide, and the impact it has.
And maybe the most striking thing, the thing that leaves you feeling really uneasy after reading this file, is the lack of closure.
Right. Not just for the Stevens family who got away, but for the house. It's still there. Empty, carrying that history, that reputation.
Yes, the file kind of leaves you hanging with this final, really provocative thought.
That the house isn't just empty.
It's waiting.
Waiting.
For who? For whoever comes next. It suggests this persistent, unresolved quality that maybe this isn't a finished story, but a continuing condition of the place itself.
And when you think about how intense things got, especially with the kids, and that reaction to the blessing, it makes you wonder, what is still there? And what happens if someone ignores the warnings and tries to move in again?